G'day everyone, this is episode 25 of AT3 and we are your Aussie Top 3. My name is Greg, aka Captain Boomerang, and as always, I'm joined by my fellow Aussies, the Stinger, Steve Ray, and little Sherby, Stacey Herbert. What's new, guys?
It's clobbering time!
Has anything happened in wrestling yet? Like, it's been a quiet few weeks.
Very quiet, hasn't it? Very, very quiet.
Yeah.
It just needs some
boring, really.
It needs some new people to show up.
Yeah.
That's what they need.
Maybe Terry might show up.
Oh, that's it.
Oh, can you imagine Uncle Terry there? Wow.
Uncle Terry, baby.
Baby.
Do you think that's what it's going to take, like, to send Vince over the edge?
I don't think Vince would care if Hogan went.
No.
If Undertaker went, that'd be massive. Ooh. That would be huge.
I think there was something anyway with AEW about, like, oh, Hulk Hogan is banned from our thing, and it's like, he's not coming to your thing anyway.
He doesn't want to, you know. Yeah, exactly. No, and besides, if he came to Tony Khan and said, "Hey, brother," you know, and Tony Khan will say, "Okay,"
roll out of bed.
They would not let him. Exactly.
Roll out of bed for more than $5 million, you know.
So, yeah,
which Khan's got it. Don't get me wrong, but, like,
yes,
you know,
yeah.
So
if AEW knows what's best for them, they won't touch Terry with, like, a 10-foot pole.
They won't. There's too many young guys there now that are like, you know, let me clutch my pearls.
I thought you guys said there's too many black people there, so, you know.
Well, that might be true as well.
We love you, Uncle Terry. Yeah.
That makes two of you.
Yeah. Well,
but more importantly, Greg, why are we here?
I was going to say, unless you have been living under a rock for the past couple of weeks, you probably noticed that a certain CM Punk has finally returned to the world of professional wrestling via AEW, as we just spoke about. So now that he has officially returned to the ring as well with his recent match with Darby Allin, we thought that for this episode 25, we'd take a look at our top three moments of CM Punk's career. So I think some are going to be obvious, some maybe not so much, but I mean, hey, you know, like we always say, it's, we're not trying to rank them in any definitive order, it's just, this is what we think. So
yeah,
but to find out what we do think, we always go ladies first. So Stacey, what makes your list of CM Punk career moments?
Right, so my personal favorite work from Punk is his work as a heel. And I think a lot of people would tend to agree with me. He can definitely do both very well. He's just, you know, that talented. He's very gifted on the microphone, as we all know. But I really resonate with his work as a heel the most. I don't know why. He's just great at pissing people off. It's definitely, like, he doesn't even try.
He's a dick.
So
that's why.
Yeah.
essentially. So my first pick is, I don't know if I'm cheating with this one, because obviously we're doing overall Punk moments, not just matches, but I'm sort of choosing a feud leading up to the match and the match. Yeah. And that is his match and feud with Undertaker at WrestleMania 29.
Nice.
Yeah. So
I had that as well.
Did you?
Yeah. And the same thing, like, the feud and everything. Like, yeah, the whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really something special. And I'm not surprised one of you guys had it as well, because I personally think it's some of Punk's best work in WWE. As we all know, he was never given a main event match at WrestleMania, and this really ate him up inside.
Oh, yeah.
And it was a pretty controversial decision at the time, during lead up to WrestleMania 29. Don't ask me what year it is. Can't remember.
2013, I think it was.
Yeah, considering Punk had essentially just come off his 434-day reign as champion. And
that was a bullshit ending too, by the way.
Yeah, I agree. They, you know, not only did he drop the title after that reign, but he dropped it to a part-timer, The Rock. So yeah, I think WWE Creative offered Punk this match with Undertaker as a kind of consolation prize. As most of us know, Taker's streak was still intact at the time, and a match with Undertaker was pretty much the next best spot on the bill to be, aside from the main event. Even though upon sort of doing my homework for this, I realized that Punk was pretty upset to be given this match at the time. I don't think he meant any disrespect to the Undertaker, but, you know, he was just so cut up that he didn't get the main event, you know, after all the work he put in as champion. Fair enough. Anyway, Punk kicked off the feud with Taker after winning the opportunity to face him at Mania. And very sadly, Paul Bearer passed away very shortly after, which ended up becoming a huge part, like almost the centerpiece of this feud, and Punk getting under Taker's skin. Him and Paul Heyman, who was his manager at the time, really pushed the envelope with this one. And another good note, actually, a lot of people know, you know, Punk's a Paul Heyman guy, but Paul Heyman has vouched for Punk very early on, even as far back as his days in OVW. And Punk ended up getting caught up sort of onto the ECW brand, like the remastered version of ECW. Anyway, they really pushed the envelope with this feud. It really pulled no punches. Basically, Punk ended up stealing Paul Bear's urn after a really tasteful tribute to him between Undertaker and Kane. And he proceeded to taunt him week to week with it, like throwing it around like a baseball or whatever. And it really made him a heat magnet. He was really great at that. And it reminded me of the controversial stuff you would see back in the Attitude Era. And yeah, so by the time the match came around at WrestleMania 29, like the feud was hot and the crowd was so invested. I had so much fun revisiting this match. I watched it last night and I knew it was a great match, but I forgot how damn good it is. It is like, it had me on the edge of my seat from start to finish. It was about a 25, 30 minute match, I think. And this was still when Taker could go in the ring, you know, like he'd obviously was approaching the end of his career, but I think this was like one of his last really great WrestleMania matches before he started to slow down. And yeah, it's, I would say Punk is one of my favorite, Taker opponents at Mania. It was absolutely amazing build up, amazing match. And I highly recommend anyone revisit it because it is really special.
Yeah, I had this as well because of a lot of the build up. Like the match is great as well, but
yeah,
the build up with, and like you said, it did sort of harken back to a lot of that Attitude Era stuff where it's like, oh shit, did they really just do that? Like, you know, at one point where Punk is messing around with the urn, you know, and like he drops it and he's like, oh shit, you know, and he drops it and fucking ashes fall out of it. That's like, oh, fuck. God, like, you know, like, oh my God, you can't do that. But like, that's the thing, like back in the Attitude Era and that, like they did shit like that every week. And it was just, you know, that's why it was so, not specifically something like that, but those kinds of antics, like that's what made people tune in to watch. Cause it's like, what are they going to do now? And like, yeah, it's a bit of that, you know, Vince Russo crash car, car crash television kind of thing. But I mean, it gets people watching, and then while they're watching, then you can put on a good match and you can do all kinds of stuff and keep their attention. So, but I liked that. Yeah. They like, I still remember like Punk, he had the urn and he's like doing like the little, like lifting it as if it was talking and doing all the like,
ooh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah. All that stuff was just like fucking, and then like, oh, sorry, I can't do it as well as, you know, old mate and all this sort of stuff. But like just that, and the feud itself, because like Punk was so good at being that like smarmy little sneaky shit heel that like, you know, even for people that like, you know, like I really like CM Punk and that, but you still did want to then see Undertaker just get a hold of him, you know, and it's like if big prick gets a hold of you, like he's going to tear your head off, you know. So But the match itself then was really good as well. Just so many little moments in it that sort of played a part into the overall picture. It was awesome. Yeah.
I reckon Punk should have been the one to beat him. But anyway.
Yeah, like given, was it like a year later or something he faced Brock?
Yeah, the next year was.
I mean, I think if Paul Bearer was still alive, I think Punk may have got the win, but because Paul Bearer had passed away, I think it was more of a let's honor him by
the tasteful thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't really do all that like dropping the urn and, you know, like shitting on a dead guy and all that kind of stuff, you know, like and then lose, you know, and then have the good guy lose, you know. You gotta
avenge
his dead friend and all that kind of stuff. Like it's
And
I mean, honestly, I think as far as even the streak, like with Brock taking it the next year, I think if Taker hadn't been concussed early on in that match and they were able to put on a better caliber of match, I don't think as many people would be upset that Brock did it. Yeah. Because, I mean, really, if anyone's going to do it, it's Brock.
Well, I get why they did it, because they were building Roman Reigns too. And, you know, Roman Reigns was supposed to be the one to beat Brock Lesnar. And then obviously, oh, shit, he beat the guy who beat The Undertaker. You know what I mean? So it made sense.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know.
Thing I think was a really missed opportunity. Like considering they made the decision to end the streak anyway a year later, is, you know, they should have kept the belt on Punk and then done a streak versus streak match. So, you know, he's like the longest reigning WWE champion versus Undertaker's like legendary WrestleMania streak. Like, the stakes don't get higher than that. That would have been amazing, but
then you wouldn't have had Dwayne versus John for the title.
Look, I think we all know, like, even if Dwayne had been busy that night, you know, WWE wanted Cena in their main event. That's just the way things were.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
Anyway.
But I guess one thing that really gets under my skin too is that he never made it at WrestleMania. And he never will. Yeah. I don't think he'll ever go back.
No, I don't think so.
And it's one of those things, like, was when, you know, Punk has spoken about it before, it was like he kept getting, like, in WWE's mind, they kept putting him with all, like, these big-name part-timers like Triple H and Brock Brock and Rock and, you know, Taker and all that. And it's just like, all right, so who's going over? Oh, well, Brock. All right, who's here tomorrow? You know, who's going to be at Raw on Monday? You know, and it's like
happened at the start of his career too. You know, he was given I'm sure someone might mention this later on, but you know, he was given these money in the bank, the brass rings, rah rah rah, and then he was in an elimination chamber as champion, wasn't he? He didn't even get to go in because he got beat up beforehand.
Yeah, Randy Orton. Like,
and Randy Orton, yeah, so
backstage and all that stuff. But I think that was all punishment for mouthing off or something backstage or some shit. So. But yeah, like the Undertaker feud, I think even the match itself, it's got, you know, it's got all the classic stuff that you expect from Undertaker, but then you've got Punk, like, you know, like Punk does the, what do they call, like old school, you know, stand on the ropes and walk the ropes and all that. Like Punk does that to Undertaker. And at one point, I love that there's a moment where I can't remember what it's called. Is it the, you know, Punk's submission where he's basically just got him in like a big, like not the crippler crossface, but like whatever else it's called. And he's got Taker in that. Was it Anaconda Vice or whatever it was?
Anaconda Vice, yeah.
Yeah. He's been gone a while. I can't remember. He's got him in that, and then Taker like does his typical Undertaker, you know, sit up moment, you know, and it's like, oh, he sits up with Punk in the while he's still in the hold, and it's just like, oh, it's shit,
great
and
moment,
yeah, that's right.
Undertaker like staring daggers in him, and Punk shitting his pants, like it was just perfect the way they did it. It was like, oh, fuck. So yeah, no, I had to go with that one as well, just because, yeah, it's not just the match, it's not just the feud, like it's the build up, it's the heel work, and like you said, this is when Undertaker was still pretty much like, he could still go, and even his presence, you know, it's just different. those last few years. Like, he sort of turned up and it was like, oh, he's this tired old guy again, right?
Yeah.
Whereas
yeah.
then it was like, fuck, here's the Undertaker. Like, look at him. He's scary, you know, prick. Like, watch out. So,
yeah.
And yeah, for like we said, for the Punk playing that perfect sort of smarmy shit heel, it's just like, oh, if Taker ever gets his hands on you, you know, you're in big trouble. And I mean, that's the whole thing. Like we always say, Roddy Piper, you know, they didn't go to WrestleMania to see Hulk Hogan. Mm-hmm. They didn't go to WrestleMania to see Roddy Piper. They went to WrestleMania to see Hulk Hogan beat the shit out of Roddy Piper.
You know? Yeah, like, yeah, very true.
So it was the same kind of thing with
but Punk. They got to main event.
Yeah, that's true. Right. Yeah. Nobody puts Terry but in the corner. That's why.
Piper
Hogan must pose.
Although Piper main evented at WrestleMania, he was never the champion. And
true.
Yeah, true.
Punk was
true.
Champion and for a long time, but he never main evented. So yeah. I don't think either guy needed it. Obviously, they both have a huge legacy in yeah. wrestling, but
yeah.
you know, some food for thought.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. And like you said, like I would say 9 out of 10 wrestlers that are wrestling today or even have wrestled in the last 10, 15 years, if you ask them who they admire more or who they respect more, that's probably, I would say 9 out of 10 of them would choose Piper over
yeah.
over Hogan because just for the, yeah. you know, for a multitude of reasons too. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Alrighty. Well, like I said, Stacey and I have gone with the Undertaker feud for number one or first yep. on the list, at least, Steve. So, what made your choice?
Well, everyone knows about Summer of Punk 2011 in WWE, but I'm going back to the original Summer of Punk in Ring of Honor back in 2005. CM Punk was the hottest talent on the indie scene at the time, and there was rumors going around that he was signing with the WWE, but you know, he was still with Ring of Honor. And the big thing happened whereas he actually defeated everyone's favorite vegan, Austin Aries, for the Ring of Honor title.
friend of the show Austin Aries,
absolute dick. he beat Austin Aries for the Ring of Honor title, but there was rumors going around that he'd actually signed with the WWE. So after that match, he cut a promo in the ring and everyone is, you know, crying, don't leave, don't go, don't go. And he just flicked a switch and on a dime, he was telling the crowd they're useless, they're hopeless, they've got no idea. And he just became this massive heel. The run only went for about 50 days because he legitimately had signed with the WWE. But the same sort of thing that happened in the WWE where he's, you know, he's got the belt. He says, I'm going to go defend it elsewhere. All that was done in Ring of Honor back in 2005. So it was just a rehatch of the story when he went to the WWE. But, you know, he had all these feuds and all these matches against Christopher Daniels and all, you know, all the Ring of Honor guys, Samoa Joe. Him and Samoa Joe had a 60-minute Iron Man match that ended up in a draw, which was the third match in their series. And a lot of people reckon that that series of matches is one of the best series you'll ever see. But Punk just... For me, the main reason I chose this one is because, one, obviously not a lot of people know about it, but as I said, it didn't last long, and he was beaten by Jamie Noble at the end for the fucking Ring of Honor title.
Wow.
but it was in a four-way. It was in a four-way with Samoa Joe, Christopher Daniels, Jamie Noble, and him. So, he went to the actual... he actually signed in, you know, parentheses, his WWE contract on the Ring of Honor belt after he turned heel in the middle of the ring a couple of weeks after he won the title. So basically he was telling them, you know, yeah, I'm going, but you're not taking the title from me. I ain't losing this title. And then in the end, obviously, we all know what happened from there. But for me, that's one of my favorite. I was watching Ring of Honor a fair bit back then, and that was, you know, one of my favorite parts of his career. And that was also when he debuted Cult of Personality as well.
Oh, cool. So is that because I mean, I've
If you go onto Ring of Honor's YouTube page,
just
type in CM Punk versus Austin Aries and it'll come up.
Okay. Because, I barely seen any Ring of Honor stuff at all.
Yeah. I think there's a, like, if you just type in Summer of Punk Ring of Honor, there's like a montage clip sort of thing of the whole thing.
Oh, cool. So you think it's definitely like that was the inspiration or for whatever for Punk's run in WWE, obviously, with the whole set, I'm going to take the title and leave and all that kind of stuff.
Like, yeah, it was pretty much same thing, except in Ring of Honor, he turned heel. In WWE, he was face.
It made him a face.
I think he rehashed a lot of his stuff from Ring of Honor in WWE. I, like Greg, didn't watch Ring of Honor, but I watched Punk's Best in the World doco in preparation for this, and they covered a little bit of it. And yeah, there was even a few like famous quotes like from his promos, like about him when the mic's in his hand, it's a pipe bomb and stuff like that, you know. He has rehashed a lot of it in WWE, and you can't really hold it against him because, you know, a lot of those viewers probably never watched Ring of Honor. You know, it's probably a very small portion of the audience.
And everybody, and they all do it. So,
exactly.
You know, that's just one of those things.
You know, and it worked on a small level. So, you know, let's try it on a larger level.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And well, look at Eddie Guerrero, like all the stuff he had done in the Indies and in ECW and all that sort of stuff. When they, and even WCW a little bit, like when they brought him to WWE and then went full on with the push with him and the whole Latino Heat thing. Like it wasn't anything really he hadn't done before, but they just turned it up to 11. It was like, what if he came out with cars, and what if he, you know, turned up the fake Mexican accent a little bit more and just shit like that, you know, like it was. But I mean, that's what worked. So I mean, Jericho kind of did the same thing as well, you know, initially. Like, everyone always says how Jericho reinvents himself. It's like, yeah, but when Jericho showed up on Raw, that was WCW Jericho. And that's why he then sort of got like the boot a bit, because I think they were like, we don't want your WCW shit here. You know, it's like, we want you to do what we told you to do, kind of thing. So then he ended up with feuds with China and shit like that.
Also, he must have been listening to our podcast about finishes, because he fully sat down in that line tamer on All Out. Yeah, he fully sat down and synced it in on MJF.
He's like, so this one's for you, Greg. Listening.
That's right. Yeah. Well, I noticed one of the young, but I don't know whichever one, Billy or Frank or Jeff, whatever their names are. One of them did a sharpshooter in their match at All Out, and he sat down. I was like, all right, good boy.
They must have listened to AT3, mate.
I'll give you that. I was like, all right, yep, great.
That was our increase in listens last week.
Yes, it was Young Bucks. Get their name right, Greg. If they're listening, you better get their name right.
Yeah. Well, Frank
Nick and Matt. Oh, I thought Nick it was and Matt.
Oh, they'll always be Frank and Billy to me.
Not Billy and Chuck.
No.
Yeah. Do yourself a favor and jump on Ring of Honor's YouTube page and check it out. It's amazing work. It really is.
Yeah.
The thing that's also crazy to me is, like you said, that he actually signed his legitimate WWE contract in the ring, like as a work for that. You know, it wasn't like a prop contract.
Yeah.
It's
that's a real like ECW McFoley kind of thing too, you know, like he was doing that kind of shit. So
Mick Foley was actually in Ring of Honor at the time.
Oh, there you go.
He'd come away from the WWE and they were talking about a feud with him. But no, that never eventuated. He ended up having his last match in Ring of Honor against his former best friend, Colt Cabana. And,
Sure, I'll lend you the money. Whoa, what?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mr. Burns, you know, like, here, can I have it back? I'll have what back?
Yes.
Oh, God. Yeah. No, that's cool. Because, like I said, not having seen hardly any of Ring of Honor, being down here, and I wouldn't even know where to look for it besides YouTube, which is good now. I can go and suss that out. But yeah, be interesting to go and check that out now and see like sort of the origins of his, his WWE Summer of Punk. So
yeah,
that'll be interesting. I think something a bit different too. I don't think many people would have picked that one to be.
No, that's why I wanted to pick it, because one, I knew you two wouldn't have it. Mm. And two, yeah, it's just something very different.
Yeah. And it's cool because, like we said, we're not just talking about, you know, Punk's WWE stuff. It can be anything. So, but what did you have, Stace, for your second pick?
Okay. So I'll be very surprised if one of you guys don't have this one. And for those that listened last week, we were recapping our favorite SummerSlam moments. And Steve, is it your pick?
It could be in there.
Okay. So I mentioned one of my favorite SummerSlam moments was Punk and Cena's match, their rematch, basically, to this match, which is their match at Money in the Bank, the very infamous Money in the Bank match in Chicago.
Yep.
Sorry,
Steve. Totally agree. It was in there.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I honestly thought it would be, so that doesn't matter. Yeah. But
it's a no-brainer. Many consider this match the best of Punk's WWE career, and I could probably agree with that. Even our best mate, Dave Meltzer, rated it 5 stars.
Oh, shit, it must have been good then.
It'll be 6 stars in Japan,
Yeah, that's right. And if Omega was in it too.
Frank and Billy, Frank and
Billy. Oh, my gosh. So this is quite a fast-paced and evenly matched wrestling match for the most part. Cena is kind of notorious sometimes for slowing down the pace. However, he really rises to the occasion and meets Punk's energy here. And as wrestlers, they couldn't really be any more different on paper. That they continue to kind of one up each other in this match, which is really fun to watch. There's really not any like bells and whistles in this match. It's just a good, solid wrestling match, you know? And, you know, a part of that is the atmosphere. You know, as we all know, it was in Punk's hometown of Chicago, and, you know, hometown crowd is always huge, but Punk is obviously very proud of where he's from, and Chicago just loves him the way that Montreal loved Bret Hart. And yeah, as I said, it's not a technical masterpiece, but it's atmospheric, it's exciting, and best of all, it tells a great story, and that's what I want from a wrestling match. Punk, who's essentially the underdog in this situation, beats WWE's chosen guy, John Cena, in his hometown and captures his first WWE title. For anyone who's about to fact check me, it is his first WWE title. It was the world title he won before with his
The big gold belt.
Anyway.
Yes.
Yeah. And he did that despite the authority doing everything in their power to stop it. I particularly love the way this match ends, because Vince isn't confident that his boy Cena is going to get it done. And him and John Laurinaitis come out and kind of prompt for the ref to ring the bell, Montreal Screwjob style. Yeah. And Cena ends up like punching out John Laurinaitis outside the ring and proceeds to tell Vince, like, this isn't how it's going to happen. Let me get it done. And then, you know, we all know what happens. He ends up eating the GTS and taking the pin. And another thing I almost forgot about this until I revisited it last night is Vince actually gets Del Rio to come in and cash in. He's the Money in the Bank holder at the time. But Punk, I think, kicks him and is able to escape. And then we all know the famous blows a kiss to Vince on the barricade and ends up, you know, running through the crowd and escaping the arena. And it's just is an absolutely iconic moment in CM Punk's WWE career. His whole career, I would say, his wrestling career. A lot of people would say this is maybe his best moment, and that's why it's in my top three.
Yeah, totally agree. It's definitely in mine as well. Like you said, it's probably the best match he's had in WWE.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just amazing. And the fact, like you pointed out, he beat the guy, and it takes a lot for Vince to let that happen. And I think that's one time that he actually listened to the fans and gave the fans what he wanted. Obviously, Daniel Bryan was the other one, but it just goes to show how good Punk was for them to let him do the job on Cena.
Twice at that.
Besides the besides the build up with the, you know, like, I'm gonna win the title and I'm gonna leave and all that, and of course, like, we, you know, blowing the kiss and all that kind of stuff, if you take that out of it, I've always preferred the match at SummerSlam with Triple H as the guest referee. Like, I've always thought that was a better match personally. Whether or not, because I had Triple H involved as well, and, you know, he was sort of, is he going to turn on him? Is he, what's going to happen? And, you know, like, at one point they're both lying on the, Cena and Punk are both out of the ring, you know, and he's counting, it gets to 9 and he's just like, oh, fuck this. And Triple H just gets out of the ring and throws them both back in. He's like, nah, we're not having a count out, like, none of that shit, you know. And then, of course, at the end, like, Punk does win, which we did bring this up on our SummerSlam episode, you know, of course, but Punk does win, but Cena did have his foot on the ropes. Triple H didn't see it, you know. Oh, well, what's okay, fine. And then, of course, Del Rio comes down and cashes in on Punk.
Yeah.
So, but the build, so the match itself, I always thought was better, but the build up and the sort of the post match shenanigans and theatrics and stuff like that at Money in the Bank, obviously, sort of were better, I thought. And that probably does, in all honesty, it probably does tip it over the edge. But I still, if I had to watch a match, I would probably watch the SummerSlam one. But
That's fair enough.
But you're right though, the Money in the Bank, that is like one of his sort of bookmark moments of his career, you know, like winning the title and leaving and all that kind of, and blowing the kiss. I mean, that's
That was awesome.
That's going to be a gift for 100 years, you know.
Like, Well, didn't Cena even quoted it in his match, in his feud against Reigns just recently?
Yeah, I heard about that.
You know, he said, I might even, if when I beat you, I might even blow you a kiss, you know. And it was, because that was the time when he was rumored to be coming back. So,
yeah.
I'm sure Vinnie Mac wouldn't have been happy about that.
Yes.
So, yeah, that's an interesting one.
No, I totally agree. Yeah. There's every reason that Stacey said too.
Yeah. And I mean, it was an interesting feud and a build up, because you're just like, well, you know, like, he's not going to leave with the diet. Like, but you did have that element of like, oh, what's going on? You know, like, we all knew it was a work, but they did a really good job of making you sort of, just for that split second, thinking like, hang on, what is actually happening here? You know, like, oh, okay, you know. But, you know, like I said,
they probably could have done a bit better with the aftermath of it, like we spoke about.
Oh, but, yeah, they didn't handle that very well. But
didn't handle that very well.
But, that's just, you know, you're unfortunate, like, booking of the time where everything had to happen in 2 weeks.
Rushed.
Yeah. 3 months, you know. So,
I think it was just a fortunate timing of Money in the Bank and SummerSlam being back-to-back pay-per-views, because they knew they wanted that as their match at SummerSlam, and fortunately they only had a couple of weeks.
I mean, in a perfect world, they would have had the you know, blow the kiss moment at SummerSlam, and then Punk returns at the Rumble, you know.
That would have been great for
a Mania match or something like that, you know what I mean? But it's easy to book in hindsight, obviously, but still. So, well, for my second pick, I don't know if you can count this as a moment, because it did sort of span more than a year, but I think just the fact that he had the WWE title for 434 days. So basically, I've got his moment as the title reign itself.
Yep.
Because not only did he sort of have it for, like we said, 434 days, but in that time, you know, he took on part-timers, he took on, you know, regular, you know, obviously like John Cena, Dolph Ziggler, Del Rio, all these guys that were sort of there every week, that kind of thing. And then he ended up sort of, it did end up losing it to The Rock. But in that same period, he went from this sort of scrappy kind of cool heel kind of thing to like the biggest baby face in the company, but then he ended up turning heel as well when The Rock came back. So like he, and all while he had the title, which is pretty rare. Most people don't turn with the title. It's either they've just won it or they lose it and then they're turned to get it back, or, you know. So I just think like so much stuff happened in that 434 days. I just thought like that's, I know it's not really a moment itself, but just the fact that he had that title reign. And I mean, before that, I think I loved how they were doing sort of like every now and then he'd turn up on Raw and be like, okay, I just passed Diesel, you know, and then like the next one is, you know, Bob Backlund from 78 and whatever else, you know, was in going forth. So
yeah, it was awesome. I love that. It was really good.
It did get funny though at one point because then he was like, oh yeah, and I'm sitting here at 400 days or whatever it was, and like the next one up was Hogan, and I'm like, you're not beating that one, pal. Like, and not me being a Hogan guy, but just it was like 4 years. You know what I mean? It's like, you're not going to have it for 4 years. No. Sorry, dude. Like, I don't think anyone's going to have it for 4 years.
No.
Ever again. But yeah, like they sort of probably should have pulled away from it once it got to that. But then he sort of started going heel. And like you said, he turned and it was The Rock and brought the Shield in and all that kind of stuff. So it, so much happened, you know, like we got the Shield out of it and, you know, he was aligned with Paul Heyman, you know, for ages. And then of course you had the feud with Brock and stuff like that as well. Like, so it just would continuously like throw extra moments at you where you're like, oh man, this is all happening. And he's still the champion as well.
Yeah.
So
one of my favorite moments in that when he was turned heel was, you know, he'd hold the belt above his hand and get the spotlight on him. He'd just stand there for ages holding the belt above his head.
Yeah.
And everyone's just like, you know, fucking put the belt down, boo, you know, but he just stands there and just stands there.
The only thing I could say that took a little bit of shine off it was there were quite a few pay-per-views where he was champion, but he wasn't the main event.
Yeah.
He was, you know, like the WWE title was the second last match or it was the first match or things like that, which, you know, because they were still going for Cena and Orton and all this kind of stuff. So, but yeah, I mean, just the fact that it's 10 years ago now, but like for the modern era, for someone to have it for 434 days, like that's, you know, and especially for someone that looks like Punk and obviously wasn't at the time really honestly well-liked backstage and things like that. So, the fact that that's how over he was that they let him hold the title for over 400 days, despite everything, you know, that like Vince and people like that actually probably legitimately thought about him. It's even more testament to how sort of on his game he was at that point.
Yeah. I wonder if he knew during that, like how far into that reign he knew he was going to be dropping it to Dwayne.
Yeah.
I don't think they would have had it. I reckon it probably popped up around November or December. I reckon they were probably just like, well, if Dwayne's coming back, what could we do? Well, we could do another match with John Cena. Yeah, oh, it'd be good if he had the title. Oh, yeah, but Punk's got it. Oh, okay, well, what if he dropped it to The Rock first? Hey, then we get Punk Rock, you know, and it's like, so to speak. You know, like, whereas really, if they wanted to make a big deal out of Rock versus Punk, like, that should have been the Mania. That, you know, like, and if you have your part-timer coming back to take the title off Punk, okay, fine, because he is a heel now and heels have to lose. That's the whole point of it. Yeah. At Mania as well, and like the returning hero, The Rock. Like, I don't think, I mean, I would have been less annoyed. I would have just, with The Rock comes home and wins the title and ends the 450 something day reign at that point, if it had gone through to Mania. And you get the Mania moment, the feel good, you know, Rock return and you know, the heel gets beaten and on the grandest stage of them all and that kind of thing. And even Punk, I don't think would probably have had a big deal with that because he would have had the main event. He would have lost the title in the best way possible at the biggest stage, you know, to the biggest star. And it's like, well, yeah. And then of course you could always have had, in that scenario, Punk's mindset is probably, he's probably a lot more happier to be there. You could then have him be the shit heel and win it back from The Rock. And now you've got another long reign. And like, who's going to, oh, fuck, we just thought we got it off Punk and now he's got it again, you know? And then
yeah,
you put someone else over at SummerSlam, like Daniel Bryan or whoever. So,
yeah. Even though Punk losing his streak to The Rock like was a travesty at the time, given The Rock was a part-timer, I really did enjoy that feud because Punk could really hang with Rock on the microphone.
Oh, yeah.
And I feel like it was a really good it was really interesting because, you know, The Rock, you know, was a star from the Attitude Era. And don't get me wrong, The Rock is an even bigger star now, but, you know, in Hollywood. And, you know, he's, as a wrestler, though, he's representative of everything in the Attitude Era, essentially. And Punk, I feel like, has sort of brought in a new type of wrestler, you know, wrestlers like Daniel Bryan and Johnny Gargano, you know, types like that. You know, like I feel like Punk represented sort of the modern day wrestler. And, you know, it's he said before, he's the voice of the voiceless. And I feel like people like Punk, you know, I'm not going to put it all on his shoulders because many people have worked hard to get to this point. And it's the same for the women's division. But people like Punk really paved the way for guys like Daniel Bryan, you know, guys like, dare I say, Adam Cole. So it was really interesting to see kind of old school versus new school.
Even Kevin Owens, match. Even someone like Kevin Owens, you know, like doesn't look like a wrestler, looks more like a fan.
Exactly.
You know, has similar kind of attitude. Yeah, it's like, oh, wow. And then you sort of think, oh, shit, he can actually wrestle this guy. And he is good on the mic and he has got that sort of rebel kind of thing. Like, you know, like you said, it made us more accepting, I think, as opposed to just being like, you know, who's this the small guy, really, you know?
Yeah.
So, but no, I just think, yeah, like I said, having the title, and wasn't even like they gave him the world heavyweight title kind of thing. It's like, oh, he's had it forever. It's like, yeah, but it's not the WWE title, you know, the main one. So, having a 434 day title reign at that time, especially, and like I said, for Punk of all people to get it, considering, what we know now, what was going on backstage and his attitude. And I mean, he's not completely innocent in it at all, don't get me wrong, but you know, his attitude, the attitude of backstage and Vince and whoever else was sort of, you know, not excited that he was the one people wanted to see. So I thought I had to mention that as a highlight of his career.
Good choice.
Alrighty, so Stacey, we're on to number three.
Yep. Okay, so for my third pick, I wanted to go with a CM Punk promo because, you know, we all know he's very famous and well-loved for his amazing mic skills and he just has a lot of charisma. And I'm not going with what you probably think I am. I'm actually going with a promo against Vince McMahon on an episode of Raw. So this was during the build-up of his match at Money in the Bank with Cena. So basically at the time, Punk was negotiating his contract with Vince in the ring. I'm not sure if you guys remember. And he's essentially listing off all these things he wants in his new contract conditions. It's the first time he brings up the ice cream bars. He wants CM Punk the movie. Just all these like ridiculous requests. He just is making a complete joke out of it. And it's about a 25-minute long segment altogether. And it is so entertaining. And I picked this above the pipe bomb because I just love it. Like it's probably one of the Punk promos that I revisit the most. It's the pipe bomb feels like a message. I mean, it is a message to Vince and authority, but here he's saying that message to his face, and Vince seems legitimately pissed off. If he wasn't legitimately pissed, then he's a great actor.
And we know Punk, he isn't.
Exactly. Punk gets really personal in this, and he just knows how to push Vince's buttons. And this whole thing feels so personal. Like, I don't feel at all like any of these words are scripted. Like, I feel everything Punk is saying in this promo against Vince. You know, obviously the conditions of the contract is a joke, but it becomes much more serious than that when he starts talking about, you know, talented wrestlers that he used to hang with, people he would consider friends that have been fired for ridiculous reasons. And yeah, it, I wonder if Vince knew that this was in the promo. I highly doubt it. And Vince gets very heated, and I 100% believe he didn't intend on getting this kind of animated about this. And yeah, it feels, I keep banging on about it. It feels real, but it does. You know, I love Stone Cold's work with Vince McMahon, and, you know, Stone Cold will probably always be Vince McMahon's biggest feud and arch nemesis. But, you know, that it feels, it doesn't feel very personal when you compare it to this, and it, you start to feel like the line between kayfabe and real life is blurring a little bit. And yeah, it's really good watch. About halfway through the segment, Cena ends up coming out, and even that part of the promo alone is amazing. It's actually in Cena's hometown of Boston, and this is when Punk kind of drops that famous line, like, you become what you've hate, you become the New York Yankees, and become like the dynasty, whereas you used to be the underdog. And he's just absolutely fire in this whole promo, and it is really some of his best work on the mic, in my opinion.
Yeah, you look, that I remember that promo, that was awesome. You just look at the whole body of work that he did during that time, and on the mic, there was no one that could touch him. No. And you talk about blurring the lines between reality, and he, I remember there was a promo he did with Triple H, and he goes, yeah, this isn't CM Punk talking to Triple H. This is Phil Brooks talking to Paul Levesque, you know? Yeah. So, you know, it's just, and you're right. Obviously he has dot points when he does his promos, but they're definitely not scripted. But he's just that smart, and he just knows what he needs to say in that moment, that it just really comes across as amazing. You know, like, he's definitely in the top, you know, few talkers on the mic, I think, in the history of wrestling. So it's really good to see. And I look, the pipe bomb, I don't have that in mind either. But I just thought, well, someone's going to cover a promo of some sort, and it's good to see, because he's just amazing to watch.
Yeah,
that's one of the better promos of his career as well, and that's really saying something, because obviously he was, you know, it's hard to find a bad promo for Punk, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, having Vince and the whole dynamic of that scene, I guess, if you want to call it that, like, you know, because Punk is kind of wandering around the ring, sort of being like, I want this and I want that, and he's, you know, looking at the crowd and doing the wrestler stuff, and Vince is just sitting in the chair. So it's an odd dynamic to have Vince, because normally Vince is the one with the power, and you need to convince, you know, him to
puff in his chest,
give me the match, and I'll fire you, God damn it, and all this kind of stuff. And, oh, look out for Vince McMahon, because, you know, he's the boss and he's the owner, and, you know, he'll make your life a living hell and all this kind of shit. Or you're like Austin and you get up in his face and all this kind of thing. Whereas, like, this one, Vince is just sitting in the chair as if, like, well, are we going to be businessmen or what? You know, and Punk's just like, fuck you, I want ice cream bars, you know? Yeah. So, at one point, he's just like, you know, like, I'll say whatever I want or whatever it is, and you'll like it. He's like, I'll kick you in the nuts and you'll thank me for it or something like that. It was just like, yeah, holy fuck. So,
Another thing is he's obviously forcing him to apologize, and we all know how much Vince hates the watch hands and how hard they work to like get the crowd to stop doing that. And Vince is like, okay, I'm sorry. And then Punk's like, what? What if there was ever appropriate time? And then he's like, I'm sorry, son of a bitch, and he just loses his temper, and that feels real.
It does seem like it's like, all right, we'll go out and say this, all right, then I'll say this, okay, yeah, great. And but then Punk seems to be that guy who'll just be like, I'll just take it a little bit further, and like get backstage, you're like, what the fuck, you know. But I mean, yeah, obviously, I could see Vince is such a fucking weirdo. Like, I could see him being out there expecting one thing and then getting something else and getting shitty about it for real. And then, walking backstage and being like, that was great. You know, like, fucking, you know, you really made me pissed off out there. Like, fucking, good job. You know, it's just because he's such a fucking weirdo. Whereas, like other people that sort of hold a grudge, where I don't think Vince really does to a degree. I mean, some things maybe, but yeah, I think if you can make money and you can, you know, get over, I think he's pretty quick to forget about it, because it's like, that's all right, because now we've got something to work with next week, you know, and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So,
yeah.
But yeah, that's definitely a top promo as well. That's a winner.
I like the another promo he did with Triple H when he's asking Triple H for the match, and Triple H goes to get out the ring, and he goes, you have to go ask your wife.
Yeah. There's one backstage as well with Stephanie, and it's like, look, good luck, you know, they're talking about this, and I'm like, yeah, whatever, like, you mean it, blah, blah, blah. And Stephanie's like, no, it's fine, you know, good luck. She puts her hand out like for a handshake, and he's like, look, I would, but I know where that hand's been. And he just walks away. Like, yeah. So, and for all that we say, you know, Triple H and all this kind of stuff, like, you know, but I think Stephanie would be the one person who she can't take a joke. Like,
yeah,
no,
the amount of times like they've mentioned how, you know, that time Dusty Rhodes put his hand in front of her face in the ring, and
oh, that's right,
he, you know, they were tearing strips off him backstage afterwards, like, nobody does that to me, blah, blah, blah. Like, I get fucked.
Like, Dusty's like, I do what I fucking want.
Yeah, Batista has had famous tirades online about Stephanie and stuff as well, how it's no one ever gets the upper hand on Stephanie, and you know, she never puts anyone over and all that sort of stuff, so, which is true. So, I mean, Vince,
her and Triple H are very well matched.
Yeah, I mean, even Triple H, though, like, Triple H has put a lot of people over, you know what I mean? Like, whereas, like, and he is, there are times where, like, he is defeated, you know what I mean? Like, he's been beaten and he loses that feud, whereas, like, no one ever gets the best of Stephanie.
Only Ronda Rousey.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's because Stephanie loves her.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Because they looked at her and they saw money.
Yeah,
I was going to say, because she brings in millions, that's why.
Yeah. Even AJ Lee and Stephanie had a great promo, and, you know, AJ Lee kind of brought it on the mic as she usually does, and Stephanie still kept getting the one up on her.
Yeah, it's like you never get that. She never has that comeuppance, you know, and it's like, well, okay. You know, like, whereas Triple H, you know, you know, he's been beaten, he's lost the title and all that sort of shit, you know. Like, Daniel Bryan beat him to get into the, you know, the first match of Mania to then get into the triple threat and win the title and all that kind of stuff, you know what I mean? And it's like, it's, they come up and it's, but, like, no one ever beat Stephanie, really. And like we said, except for Ronda Rousey, so.
Yeah.
But even then it was like, oh, yeah, but she had Kurt Angle helping her and all that. Fuck, whatever. Yeah, Stephanie's that kid at school where you were playing a game and be like, oh, I shot you. Oh, I've got like special bulletproof armor on that like deflects, you know, all kinds of lasers, and like, get fucked, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
She's Cartman, basically. Yeah. All righty, Steve, third and final pick.
Okay. This pick is, it's over a period of time again, I guess. I'm talking the stuff he did with the Straight Edge Society. I like the start. For me, like the start of it was basically in that feud with Jeff Hardy when he called him on all his drug abuse and all that sort of stuff. And that's where Punk sort of said, you know, he's straight edge, rah, rah, rah. Obviously, we know what happened there. He beat Hardy and Hardy had to leave. He then formed the Straight Edge Society by transforming Festus. apparently, they said that he'd been drugged by his friends and he'd got taken the drugs away from him, and now he's not a drug fucked and loopy person like Festus was. And we all know Festus is Luke Gallows.
Yep.
What? So, and then, I know. Throughout the time, you know, he was looking, he always looked to recruit people, to the Straight Edge Society. But the biggest thing was everyone had to shave their heads. And, you know, people like Darren Young were going to be recruited, but he didn't want his head shaved. There was other people like, he had a feud with Rey Mysterio. If Rey Mysterio lost, he had to join. And there was just all these different things. And Serena Deeb, she was part of the Straight Edge Society, and she had her head shaved on TV. And that was the three of them. And I think then Joey Mercury joined.
Yeah. But
I just love the like he was like that cult leader, I guess. But you just really could see that was probably the first time you really saw what he was capable of doing. And the whole thing, it went for didn't last too long, only a few months or so, because him and Mysterio had that bit of a feud, and then he got into a feud with Luke Gallows, and Luke Gallows ended up getting fired just after Punk beat him in the match, and then they disbanded the SES, and then he then went on to the what was the name? What was the group he went to? The Nexus. That's right. After that, but
he had that feud with Big Show as well, where he was
wearing
the mask for a while because it was like he had his head shaved and he did the Kurt Angle thing. It's like, no, I didn't get my head shaved. I've still got hair. Yeah. I'm just wearing a hat.
He had his head shaved because he lost the match at Over the Limit. Another one of those great pay-per-views that they put on.
Yeah.
That the whole Straight Edge Society gimmick, whilst it didn't last too long, I thought it was pretty cool. And really showed we could do, like I said.
Yeah, it felt like one of the first kind of instances where he had a bit more creative freedom to do what he wanted with his character. And I mentioned before I revisited his doco the other night, and he was talking about he really wrote a lot of that stuff himself. Apparently he just went into Vince's office and he's like, here's the next like 13 weeks of TV. And Vince was like, okay, all right. And he was just so happy that he kind of took it upon himself to do that, you know, that he had that drive, I suppose. He really had that kind of cult leader thing about him. He was saying like, he was really trying to push the envelope and kind of be like a Jesus-like figure.
Yeah.
He even started watching like, I can't think of the right word, like the religious shows that are usually on like ridiculous hours in the morning.
Televangelists.
Pulling some stuff from that to use as inspiration. And it's really interesting. It's a shame that it ended as soon as it did and how it did. But I think this was like one of the earlier instances in WWE when he was able to sort of flex his creative muscles.
It showed that he could like carry feuds and stuff on the mic as well.
That's right.
He's that talker. Like you can have he's like the good talker on the mic surrounded by his stable of heels that'll, you know, do his dirty work for him kind of thing and keep him safe and all that kind of shit. And I mean, when he had the longer hair like that too, and the beard, I don't think it was an accident that he sort of kept the hair long and he had the beard going and stuff while he's this cult leader. Definitely. Cause he did look like Charles Manson at times as well.
That's true.
With all that kind of shit. So, the charismatic sort of cult leader that'll get you to do, you know, what I tell you to do kind of thing. I always liked the Straight Edge Society stuff. I thought it was good. It was it was taking that classic trope of like the bad guy doesn't realize he's the bad guy, because he was saying like, you know, you cheer people like Jeff Hardy, who's been, you know, a drug addict and, you know, drunk driver and all this kind of stuff, and you cheer him because he jumps off the top rope, yet I've lived a clean life and I don't have any drug addict problems or, you know, addictions or any sort of vices to, you know, ruin my body or my performance and stuff like that, and yet, you know, you boo me and this kind of stuff. That's like he turned that, like, what would normally be a commendable attribute, but he turned it into that self-righteous, you know, asshole kind of thing. And that's where, like you said, like the televangelist thing kind of comes in. And then the whole idea of the cult leader, like I said, the Charles Manson kind of cult leader, and you know, and the whole thing of like, well, everyone has to have their head shaved. Oh, well, not me though. You know, like, do as I say, not do as I do kind of thing, you know? So, and all that sort of like hypocritical shit, like that's classic wrestling heel stuff, you know?
Jeff Hardy was really like a perfect opponent to kick off that gimmick, because you know, everyone knows his struggles with substance abuse and
Victory Road.
We talk about, you know, things getting personal. Like, I wonder how Jeff felt, you know, having his like struggles kind of held against him.
The only thing I think would have been even more interesting if that's when they had brought back like Jake the Snake or Scott Hall or someone like that.
Oh shit. Did
you just to be like, oh man. Because I mean, at least they'd be able to go back and forth with him on the mic. You know, whereas Jeff Hardy's just like, you know.
Yeah.
He doesn't really talk. But like Jake and Scott, even when they were fucked up, they could still work the mic pretty well.
Although so. I don't know, CM Punk made Kevin Nash look like a freaking third grader on the mic, didn't he?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. I think that's another one where I think, like, because Nash was always pretty good on the mic and he's.
Yeah.
But I think that was kind of like where it was like, hang on. You could almost see Nash being like, hang on, this is not what we talked about. Like, and then.
You could tell sometimes that he's like, he's going off script a bit.
Got a bit lost of like, well, how far can I go? Because if I go off, you know, the cuff, it's like, well, so. Whereas that, like, you know, 10 years earlier, Nash would have just said whatever he wanted. He wouldn't give him a fuck. But
yeah, exactly.
Not when, you know, he's getting paid to not wrestle and Triple H is his buddy and he's in charge and that kind of stuff. So, don't know. It'll be interesting. But no, I like that choice, Steve. I think it's underrated, the Straight Edge Society stuff that Punk did. And just as a faction in general, I think they're, considering it was really made up of nobody besides Punk.
Yeah,
I know all the marks will be like, "Oh, Luke Gallows, he's a fucking legend." But yeah,
Luke Gallows wasn't Luke Gallows back then, you know. Yeah. Exactly.
But yeah, just all, you know, that sort of they sort of took the what was it, like the Right to Censor? Like they kind of took that and gave it a different spin and sort of turned it up to 11 and made it even more kind of that hypocritical. You know, heel faction sort of thing, like, oh, we're here to save you and all that, so save you from yourself, all that sort of shit. So, but yeah, all right, well, for mine, you guys, I thought you would have picked it by now. Like we said, it's the boring option, it's the predictable one, but you know, I don't think we could have a show without mentioning the pipe bomb in detail. I mean, there's not a huge amount we can say about it. Everyone knows it to death. It's probably one of the most played YouTube things ever. But yeah, just the fact that at the time, I mean, and this was years ago, like, whereas now people are really sick of WWE and just the constant shit that they pump out and expect people to enjoy. But at the time, you know, like, we thought that was really bad back then, you know what I mean? You look back at it now and think like, actually it wasn't great, but it's 10 times better than it is now. But the fact that you had someone like Punk saying that, like it was a real like, well, hang on, what are they doing here? Because they are saying what, you know, basically like what the internet is saying. And, you know, people were sick of Cena winning all the time and, you know, Super Cena, and Cena kicks out at two and all that kind of stuff. But just the fact that I just liked it, the pipe bomb, not so much that it was like, oh, he's saying things he shouldn't say, because like no one's going out there and saying anything they want. You know what I mean? Like it was, it wasn't like he just went out and it's not a shoot, brother, you know? But the fact that he started with Cena and saying, you know, this idea that you're the best, and, you know, but then he saying, you know, well, the only thing you're the best at is like kissing Vince McMahon's ass. And, you know,
yeah, it was awesome.
You do a better job of doing that than Dwayne, you know? So you bring The Rock into it, and he goes, and even do a better job than Hulk Hogan did, you know? And it's like, so he's bringing all these, like, oh shit, like he's really throwing stones at you know, the big names. The only person he didn't really mention was Austin, but I think that was smart.
He was wearing an Austin shirt.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's smart not to sort of completely have a crack at Austin as well, because I think then you would have split the crowd, whereas... Yeah. People were hang on a minute, we fucking, that's Steve Austin you're talking about, god damn it, you know, like, whereas you say like, oh, you can shit on Cena because everyone was shitting on Cena at that point, you can shit on The Rock because he left and people are like, yeah, fuck him, you know, and like and Hulk Hogan, yeah, fuck Hulk Hogan, he was overrated, fucking whatever else, all the shit that people say. But then he went on, you know, like, you know, Vince McMahon, he's a millionaire that should be a billionaire, and the only reason he isn't is because he just listens to his fucking idiot daughter and his doofus son-in-law, and even when he's dead, like, that's the one where you can feel the crowd go like, oh shit, when he's like, this company might be better when Vince McMahon is dead. It's like, oh fuck, like, he said that on TV, hi kids, you know, like, it's a PG fucking And then, but then saying like, oh, but then it'll still suck because it'll just be Triple H and Stephanie like looking
at them. That's right.
Yeah.
And then the moment where they cut the mic off, I am interested to know.
I don't
think they cut the mic off in him on, you know, on for real and all that kind of shit. But like, I don't know whether he was meant to go into the whole thing of like, look, they have this thing about anti-bullying and be a star and all that kind of thing. Well, let me tell you something. And it was like, hang on. Yep. Now you might be going too far, Phil. Like, because you start going to that, that's fucking with their charity shit and that's fucking with the bottom line and the money.
Yeah,
and
true. They're like,
hang on a sec. So that's the only part of it where I could be convinced by, you know, whoever to say like, no, that's where they really did cut his mic off, like for real, you know. But even then, I don't think so. But
I liked the part when he's talking about, I might go defend the belt, the Ring of Honor, because he didn't mention any other wrestling companies at the time. Like, Vince would not have allowed that. And then even say, oh, I'm breaking the fourth wall, hi, Colt Cabana. You know, that was just, for me, it was like, oh, fuck, you know, he's not supposed to be saying that.
Yeah, it was a real. And that was also like a callback to the Attitude Era where they would do shit like that, you know, like, you know, when, you know, X-Pac came back to be part of DX, you know, where Triple H is like, you bring back your friends, and X-Pac comes out, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, you know, the only reason Nash and Hall aren't standing here with us is because they're being held hostage by WCW, you know, this kind of shit.
Yeah.
So they were mentioning them, you know, Jim Cornette would mention them earlier on in the war and stuff. But then once the NWO sort of took off huge and they were losing, then it was like, yeah, don't talk about them kind of thing. But like,
exactly,
early on they weren't afraid to do that, but then just for him to be sitting there and just be like, hi Cole Cabana, how you going? It's like, oh shit, all right.
Yep.
So I mean, I understand why some people would think that it was a 100% shoot kind of thing. Like, I get it, but yeah, it's not. But
definitely not.
But it was done so well, I understand why some people would think that, you know, oh no, fuck, that one part he said, that was real. That's why they cut his mic off.
Okay. Yeah. You know, one of the best parts of that whole promo is Cena was put through a table in the ring, and he's laying there in the ring still up against that table, listening to it word for word, not getting up, not doing anything. That was, I thought that was pretty good by Cena.
Had to sell it. Yeah. He didn't just sort of get up and start talking back or anything. He was just like, all right, I'm just gonna sit.
It's like, no, this is Punk's time, let him have it.
That's like the whole thing with that feud with Cena is it was never about Punk not liking Cena. Like Punk has always respected Cena because Cena earned his respect.
Mm-hmm.
It was more that, as he says in the pipe bomb, I hate this idea that you're the best, you know, like because he is WWE's golden child and he took the spots that Punk felt he deserved. And he, yeah, fair call, probably did deserve. And yeah, it's the pipe bomb, you know, it's at the end of the day, even though it's he's sort of speaking to Cena in the ring, it's directed and it's all for Vince at the end of the day, because that's who the real enemy is in this situation.
Yeah, I mean, he even says at the start, you know, like I like you, John, you know, I like you more than most of the other people in the back, you know, that kind of stuff. So so he does kind of still stay kind of babyface, whereas if he'd come out and shit on Cena completely, you know, you would sort of be heel by default almost, just because, you know, seen as a baby face. So if you're, you know, throwing shit at him, well, it makes you a heel. But yeah, it was, I don't know. I just think like it's, you know, it's been talked about to death, but I just think like, I mean, it really, to me, that's one of those moments where like you go from the pipe bomb to the Money in the Bank to the SummerSlam, you know, to Undertaker feud. Like these are these things where it's like these stepping stones to like the character that everybody remembers of
it Punk. Made him a mega star, really.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And that was kind of one of the first big things of like, oh shit, like,
yeah,
what's he gonna say next week, you know, and who's he gonna talk about on Raw this week, you know, and what's he gonna say now that he's in a ring with John Laurinaitis and now he's talking to Triple H and this kind of Stephanie and this kind of stuff. So, and I think that's why part of the reason why he became the big star that he was at the time, and why then, of course, so many people are so excited that he's come back, is because they remember that shit. They remember the pipe bomb. They remember the Undertaker feud. They remember the promo with Vince. Where are my ice cream bars? All that kind of stuff. So,
fun fact about the ice cream bars at AEW: he actually paid for them and handed them out to the crowd.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Out of his own pocket.
Yeah. Mm. But then he goes, he did a promo on Dynamite, I think it was, where he goes, but they're on sale at All Out. See, that's how I get you. I give them away for free and then I make you buy them afterwards.
And they would have freaking sold too.
Oh, for sure. He's got a very smart brain. Like, he learned a lot from Paul Heyman. In the Best in the World doco, it shows how when he was in OVW, he wasn't getting the push that he wanted. And that possibly could have been, I think you said it before, Greg, because of Paul Heyman being in Vince's ear.
Yeah.
But he was able to sit back, watch Paul Heyman run a show, time a show, everything. And I think, you know, he learned a lot from not getting a push too early, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, and otherwise he's Roman Reigns.
Yeah.
And it's now people like can appreciate him, but it's
Remember he was on that Survivor Series team with Kofi and DX, and they ended up winning like 5-0 in the Survivor Series, and he was on that team. That was one of his first big matches.
Yeah, it's just like, well, all right, we'll see what happens. But yeah, it's like, well, you push, like you said, you push them too hard, or you tell people this is what you want. People go, no, we don't. So, I mean, they bring back Batista. He's going to win the Royal Rumble. No, we don't want fucking Batista.
No, we don't want that.
No.
And then it's like,
look, if anyone doubts, you know, that, or if anyone, you know, still thinks that the pipe bomb was a shoot, he gets into in the doco that I think Michael Hayes approaches him like the night of the show and says, like, we want you to just literally air out all your grievances.
That's right.
Obviously, the decision probably would have come from Vince. You know, I'm sure it would have had Vince's approval, as everything would. But Punk was an angry, like, angry guy at the time, you know?
He was legit going to leave, wasn't he, at the
time? Yeah, he was pissed. And Look, I love Punk as a wrestler. You know, he's great to watch, and you know, I enjoy all his stuff. But you know, if you don't think that Punk has a huge ego and he's very arrogant, then you're dreaming, you know.
Definitely. That's what I said at the start of the show. I mean, I'm a big fan of him, but I mean, I do think he's a bit of a dick, because he does seem to kind of love himself a bit. But I mean, that's fine. I don't care about that if I'm going to watch him as a performer, you know what I mean? It's every now and then it comes out and I'm like, that's probably a bit too like arrogant to be your baby face kind of thing. But I mean, but then seeing him in some interviews and stuff like that, it's a bit like, yeah, he kind of, you know, like he was the best in the world at the time and things like that. Don't get me wrong. But it did seem like he kind of thought he should be, you know, like he did kind of almost think he was bigger than everyone all put together at one point. It's like, yeah.
Well, he should have main evented WrestleMania. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think that that's something where they did really fuck him over and and things like that. But I don't know. Even just when he comes back, you know, when he came back to AEW that first night, even then it was a little, you could see it a little bit of like, oh yeah, I'm glad you people appreciate me because, you know, I'm so awesome kind of thing. So, I don't know. Like,
but he is.
Yeah, I know, but it just, I don't know. There's something, he definitely has that big ego, like, so he said, which I mean, 9 out of 10 wrestlers would have. So,
yeah, exactly.
So many wrestlers do. And I'm just happy that Punk is finding love in wrestling again. Cause, you know, I recognize that Punk is an arrogant guy and, you know, he has earned a bit of arrogance because, you know, he's had an amazing career even prior to his return to wrestling a couple of weeks ago.
You're not talking about MMA, are you? Because that wasn't amazing.
Well, if anything, it might have kind of knocked him down a peg or two.
Well, he's removed himself from the USADA testing pool, so that means he won't be fighting MMA again.
That's a wise decision. but you have to, like, he's an arrogant guy, and sometimes I hear him say things or I read things, and I'm just like, geez, dude, like, just calm down a bit. But you know, he's friggin' like he scratched and clawed his way to the top, you know, and sometimes it's easy to forget that, you know.
Oh, yeah, that's it. And like I said, I don't think that's necessarily, like, it doesn't make me dislike him or anything like that. But
yeah.
And like I said, like 9 out of 10 of the wrestlers would have massive egos as well, you know. So
yeah, I guess that's
why they are who they are, you know.
Yeah, exactly. That's right.
What I'm trying and failing to get at is, you know, it was really the saddest thing for me is that, you know, this pro wrestling that Punk poured his like life, heart and soul into, you know, it became this negative thing for him and this place of hurt and frustration, you know. So I'm just so happy that he's returned to wrestling simply so he can, you know, end his career on a high and I guess, you know, realize that there's still fun to be had. You know, it would have been a real shame for him to go out that the way he did, you know.
Yeah, like one of the things he loves most in the world. And
yeah.
Sort of, he felt that he had to leave for his own good kind of thing. So exactly. now he can come back and hopefully he's enjoying himself. And yeah, I mean, the world of wrestling is obviously better with him in it than out of it. Yes. So, and of course, like we said, now that AEW, it's the first time where I've thought, like, I'm not one of these people that's like, you know, oh, they're the number one thing overnight and WWE's in big trouble. It's like, well, you did have 400,000 less people watch the second show Punk was on than the first. So we'll see, you know what I mean? But having said that, they got Punk now, they got Brian, they got Cole, they still have, like I said, I give Kenny Omega a lot of shit, but I mean, he is a good wrestler. They got Omega, they got these other guys, like we said, like Miro and and Jericho and even Sting hanging around, that kind of thing.
And what's the Bucks' names again, Greg?
Oh, Billy and Frank.
Billy and Frank, that's right.
That's right, Billy and Frank, yep. They keep doing that sharpshooter correctly the way they did in that other match. They might earn
their real names.
That's right. I might be like, well, good work, Henry, whatever.
Can't use that name. I don't think you're allowed to use that name.
No. But I am glad that he's come back. I honestly do hope that AEW become a legit competition to WWE.
Because
it can only mean good things for people watching it, because both companies then have to step their game up. And everyone always talks about the Attitude Era and all that and the Monday Night Wars. And, I mean, wrestling was never better than that period in time when you had two companies at the top of their game, mostly, going at it. And, you know, every character on the show was almost a household name, at least for wrestling fans. So,
And the one way to keep it going is to give us Punk versus Adam Cole. Simple, done, easy. I booked it for you, Tony.
All right. Well, that's our Aussie top three for this episode.
Can I just give one more quick thing? I was hoping we could have another mention. There's a match from 2001 IWA Mid-South. It's CM Punk, Eddie Guerrero, because he'd been released from the WWE, and Rey Mysterio.
I've actually seen that one. I have seen that one.
Fucking amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, like a triple threat. I have actually seen that one. That is worth watching, definitely.
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead, Greg.
Oh, no, you're right. I was just going to say, we have gone through our top three. Steve brought back some memories of Ring of Honor in 2005 and the original Summer of Punk. Stacey and I agreed that the whole Undertaker feud and build up to WrestleMania with Paul Bearer and all of that deserved a mention. I couldn't go past the 434-day title reign. And, of course, Stacey went for the promo with Vince on Raw, where we talked about ice cream bars and kicking the old man in the nuts and all kinds of things. Stacey, you also agreed with Steve that the match against Cena at Money in the Bank and the whole, you know, leaving with the title and blowing Vince a kiss, that definitely deserved a spot, as did the Straight Edge Society. Steve, you had that on your list with good old Luke Gallows getting over his drug addiction and no longer having to suffer as Festus. But, of course, all the Charlie Manson stuff and the cult, you know, leader, and that's sort of definitely worth a mention. And, of course, it's a boring pick, but like we said, the pipe bomb had to be there, so we threw that in as well. But that is our Aussie top three for this episode. Before we leave, don't forget to follow us on Twitter. I'm at GregT13. Stacey is at Little Sherby. Steve is at Stinger57. Of course, you can follow our account at Aussie Top 3. And as always, all roads lead back to at the Steel Cage. But for the moment, that is it for episode 25, our silver edition, if you want to call it that, which is probably appropriate since Punk has made his way back to AEW. But that is episode 25 of Aussie Top 3. And until next time, we'll see you next time.